Hi, my name is Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
And this is Edge Cases, a podcast about, often Apple-related, software development, and mammal-reptile genetic experimentation. Is that too obscure? Do you get that from the last time, though?
I can't remember what I had for breakfast. So
furry, you know?
Oh,
no?
Okay, yeah, right. Turtles all the way down. Furry turtles.
Yes.
Okay,
this is episode 12. We're recording on Saturday, August 4th, 2012. And our topic today is my week with AppCode.
Oh, okay.
So,
yes,
okay,
listeners at home, as we go into it, I am as surprised as you about the topics Andrew chooses.
Because I forget whether I've told you or not. Would you rather I told you before we started?
You know, I want to be surprised along with the listening audience.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good to get the genuine reaction. Okay.
And that way I'm as ill-prepared as you are.
Yes. Okay. So one bit of follow-up from actually the last couple of episodes where we mentioned it. We have mentioned a couple of times how, or at least I mentioned, that I thought I had heard that Apple had released two versions of Aperture on the App Store. So they'd released a first version, and then they'd released a second version where it was a completely different app, and that was how they got around not being able to charge a second time for a new release, a new major release. And it turns out that that was completely wrong. From what Wikipedia tells me, the Aperture 3.1.1 was released January 6, 2011 on the App Store at $80, and there have been no major releases since then. So no, nothing like that.
You know, we give you a soapbox and immediately you use it to spout disinformation.
Yeah, I do, yes. Yep, more coming up. So, okay. So let's see. This started with a couple of things, but we have to start somewhere. There was a Mark Thalman tweet from July 12th.
Oh, really? I know Mark Thalman.
You do? Yeah. So it's Thalman?
Yeah, Thalman.
Okay. So he says, for an excellent Mac developers podcast that actually talks about code, check out Edge Cases. And that that made an impression on me because it is something that we tend to do, and I believe we've actually talked about this, that we are trying to be a little lower level than other podcasts for developers. We will be talking about actual developer topics instead of just topics which are of interest to developers. Mm-hmm. That sound about right?
Yeah, I would say so.
But what we've been doing over the last couple of weeks, not that this is bad, but we've been going a little higher level. We've been rising up a bit to more abstract, more general, more kind of fuzzy topics, or at least I have. Mm-hmm. And so I've been thinking the last couple of weeks about, well, you know, what topics could I pursue that are a little more low level, more directly related to developers? And the first topic I thought of was Haskell, because mm-hmm. There was a Patrick Thompson tweet where he said, "Hate to be blunt about this, but if you don't realize how much of your time OBC is wasting, you should try using a truly modern language," mm-hmm. which I figured would be balm to your ears, Wolf.
Yep.
Right. So I did say, well, I'm game. I'll try it. But I only got myself a Haskell book, like a week ago. Mm-hmm. So,
and you're not fluent in it already?
Yeah,
slacker.
Not quite enough time to have anything interesting to say about it. So the second topic was...
You could criticize the font choice of the book cover.
Actually, oh, God, no, don't get me started. okay, so the second topic was AppCode. And I actually wrote a post about this on the 15th of July called App Chowder, where I said, when I complain about this or that inadequacy in Xcode, there's always a small but persistent chorus singing the praises of JetBrains' Coco IDE AppCode. Mm-hmm. I called it App Chowder after Claim Chowder, which I assume most people in the audience, in our audience, that will ring bells for them, in that claim chowder is a term probably not invented by John Gruber, but certainly popularized by him. He had some sort of post or tweet or something in the podcast about where it actually came from, but I don't remember where anymore. And claim chowder is the idea, coming from clam chowder, of course, but claim chowder is this idea that John is going to call out the people who make stupid predictions, basically, about something or other. You know, how many iPods Apple's going to sell, et cetera. And so that he can come back to them later and say, you were wrong. And so I kind of I followed the same route in saying, well, I'm going to lay out all of my stupid predictions, all of my doubts about AppCode, and, you know, in the hope that I'm wrong about some of them, certainly, and the idea being that when you bring your demons forth, when you conjure your demons, it's easier to exorcise them away, something like that.
I thought LaunchD does that.
What? So, in the article, I'm not going to go over it in great detail, but the main doubts were whether they could keep up with Apple's features and or platform advancements, whether I would be too bothered by the non-native UI, mm-hmm. and whether they would be able to integrate well with the existing Apple tools. So certainly in terms of the UI, just to start off, it's actually not bad. Like I think someone tweeted me that, hey, it's ugly, but it worked. Well, it's actually not that ugly. Like it doesn't, I'm looking at it right now. It's a lot of shades of gray, mm-hmm. which,
50.
Wow. I'm just walking into him today, aren't I? Well, you know, Xcode itself has pretty much gone gray with Xcode 4, so it doesn't even look necessarily that different.
It's gone gray, yet it isn't mature.
Something like that. Now, when I say it's prettier than Eclipse, that has a specific meaning because Eclipse and AppCode are similar in one respect in that they're both non-native apps. And so if you don't know about this already, I'll go into a little bit of background. So AppCode is actually written in Java, and it's by a company called JetBrains, which is a Czech company. It's been around for a while. I certainly had heard of them for many years ago, and it turns out they were launched in 2000, so over a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And their biggest product is something called IntelliJ IDEA, mm-hmm. with IDEA all in caps, or IntelliJ. I think it's probably IntelliJ.
I've heard everyone talk about it as IntelliJ.
IntelliJ, right. And so it's a Java IDE. Both in the sense that you can write Java in it, and you can write a bunch of other languages, but also that it's written in Java. And they apparently are enough experts in the JVM to be writing their own language called Kotlin. KOTLIN.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they gave a talk about it in emerging languages. I think the only emerging languages I missed. So, yeah.
Okay. And so, and the URL is JetBrains. JetBrains, all one word, .com/OBJC/, and that's how you get to the AppCode launch page. And so let's see now, and so we'll get back to a couple of these points as we go along. Now the reason I was kind of making a big deal about starting off on this new thing, this adventure, was because in order for me to make up my mind about it, I had about 30 days. Because it's a 30-day trial version of the software. It's not free. And it's $99. Mm-hmm. Now, so for me, I wouldn't necessarily want to spend $99 on a whim. It's not an insubstantial amount of money.
Because that could be like a pewter cat bowl.
Yes. We know how many of those I have. And it also seems like a lot compared to App Store prices these days. But one point I wanted to make is that, so it's not necessarily something you do on a whim, but it actually isn't really that much. And to make that point a little clearer, I'm going to talk a little bit about another Mac IDE, CodeWarrior. So, again, I don't know exactly how much of our audience knows about CodeWarrior or doesn't know about CodeWarrior. CodeWarrior was very big in Mac IDEs a decade and a half ago. They made a big splash. They helped Apple get through their 68K to PowerPC transition. And if you know what those mean, don't need me to tell you about CodeWarrior probably. And if you don't know what they mean, it will take me too long to explain it. But anyway, but their price for, and the one I was able to look up for, let's say CodeWarrior version 8, 2002, and they only did a version 8 and then a version 9, so this is almost near the end of their life cycle, was $600 per mm-hmm. license, mm-hmm. Suggested retail price, and $300 for renewal. Mm-hmm. So even if you were just getting an upgrade, that's three times as much as the JetBrains mm-hmm. Price. And so how do you deal with that? Well, now Codeware itself pretty much died, as I said. It only got to version 9 2003, or a little longer than that, but certainly the writing was on the wall for a long time before that. Codeware pretty much died because it was facing Apple's free tools. And so how do you compete with free? Well, if you're Apple competing with free or lower cost, you pitch your products to the people who will pay for it, and you go with sort of premium products or things where you know you have a hook.
Right.
Like the iPod was, 1,000 songs in your pocket, right? And it was simpler than everybody else. And then you gradually inch your way down the price points. But the other way to do it that other companies have maybe had more success for is to leverage what you already have or what you have access to lower the cost so that you're not trying to spend quite some money to compete with free. And so the Android phone makers are trying this now. And Codeware actually tried this as well. They made a Mac IDE, but then they also branched out and made a Windows IDE. And not like they made an IDE that worked on Windows, but they also made that IDE would also compile Windows apps.
Right.
And then they also would compile for various game platforms and embedded platforms and everything else. They tried everything. And it didn't work. But so JetBrains is actually winding up doing a lot of the same thing. So again, the app code itself is also non-native, and it looks pretty much like it's probably using most, if not all, of the same code as IntelliJ. It's the same IDE, just using a different target for what it does. And we'll get to more of that as well.
Okay, so while you're still on the pricing topic, do you remember there was that I want to say it was like maybe 3 or 4 months where Apple charged for Xcode in the App Store.
Yep.
Yeah. So do you remember what the price was on that? I want to say it was like $5 or something.
It was. I'm thinking it was either $5 or $1. I mean, it wasn't much at all.
Okay. I seem to remember it was like maybe $5 because I remember it was just enough where the complaint was that if you were basically asking for help on an open source project, you said, oh, in order to help, you have to go get this app. It's like, man, I'm already helping you, but now you want to put up $5 to help you even more? Like, it was $1. You might, that's a little bit easier to swallow, I think. But yeah, it seemed like it was definitely not enough to cover the costs of Xcode's development, but it was enough to be a roadblock. But anyway, I just want to bring that up while we're talking about prices.
Sure. And yeah, I mean, they might as well not have charged anything for it, which they eventually wound up doing.
Right.
Right. Okay. So so when I did try it out, I found out a couple things. It can open Xcode projects just fine, which in and of itself is a nice thing. It just does good things about their product because Xcode projects are not documented.
Right.
And they're actually pretty complicated. So it opened just fine. It didn't make any extraneous changes when it opened it, when it was dealing with it. And it was also able to add a new file just fine as well. So it was and bonus points for allowing me to use an Xcode new file template for the file. And what that tells me is that they are rightly attuned to the fact that I'm trying this out. Most people are going to be trying this out. And they're going to go back to their Xcode project afterwards. So you don't necessarily want a bunch of files which have an entirely different format for their, you know, their opening code, their opening code comments, whatever. And so they did that pretty well. And even the UI actually looked pretty good for that. There was it was nice and anyway, it looked pretty nice. But then on the other side, they got the normal substitution right for the, you know, the class name. And I was actually making a category, so even a little trickier than that. But the custom organization field was not filled in. So that whole thing that everybody always makes fun of, you know, my organization. Is it my organization or is it like
underscore underscore my company name underscore underscore?
That would be it.
Yeah.
They didn't replace that. And in fact, in the project that I was using, I had actually set a per project organization name. I don't remember why I did that anymore. But, you know, you think it could have taken that out if it wanted to, or it could have done what Xcode does, which is take it from your address book. Mm-hmm. It had to do with those things.
They don't want to bring up that malicious seeming pop-up anymore.
Well, so that's a good thing. Actually, malicious. The reason now, certainly, this app is not in the App Store, so there's no worry about that.
And I actually learned that apparently Java apps can't be on the App Store. That's what I heard. So I don't think they ever could be.
That's true. That's a good point as well. But I don't think the permission issue is one that will happen in this case, mm-hmm. because it's an app that has regular permissions and is not sandboxed. Mm-hmm. But the other thing about it, representative details, I'm not going to go into this kind of detail on everything, is that when I made the window smaller, this is actually, when I made the window smaller, it could be made all the way smaller, you know, to nothing.
Red eye of Sauron looking at you?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what it looked like. And then, you know, you make it bigger again, and then all the UI screwed up.
Oh, okay. So it's basically kind of emulating the old NS split view floating point rounding error stuff?
Well, I mean, what they're doing is they didn't do kind of the usual quality control that you would get on most Mac apps that you see. Mm-hmm. They just did the default and just went with that. Mm-hmm. And for me, those kind of things that they don't quite get right are the downsides of having a small company work on something like this, in that small companies without that same level of QA support, trying to get things out quickly on a quick release cycle, are more likely to not dot their I's in this fashion, I think. Okay. So there are some good points that we'll get to in a bit, but those are some of the downsides. Mm-hmm. Okay, so going on with my very, very brief narrative of getting through this. The navigating through files was interesting. So some of the keystroke shortcuts were the same, but some of them weren't. So for example, I'm used to using command up arrow and command down arrow to easily get to the top and bottom of files. Mm. And those didn't work. Mm. But the other ones did work, like command open brace and command close brace. Okay. Switch between tabs the way they do in Xcode. So, you know, some good, some bad. So I didn't actually do much typing in there, mostly because, again, navigation was a little difficult. I knew I'd have to learn some new ways to get around it. But so I did try some of the things which I knew other people had said would be good things that app code would be good at, symbolic inspection, especially symbolic analysis, stuff that they can do. Mm-hmm. So I ran, there's something called code inspection that they can do. And so I ran that on some files. And there was some good stuff in there. They showed me a lot of warnings about converting from different types, particularly, I believe, in the code that I was looking at. I was calling a lot of functions that return double and stuffing them into variables that took floats. Mm-hmm. Xcode hadn't warned me about these things. Mm-hmm. So they did, and you know, little things I could do to fix that. Mm-hmm. And there were quite a few warnings, quite a few things to fix. And so that, for the most part, pretty good. I did see a couple times, I saw some warnings about declaring and defining a local variable, doing both of those things in the same line. Mm. They were saying, well, no, that's bad. And so I was thinking, well, you know, no, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
In fact, what I'll do when I can is define something in its declaration, and if it's a scalar, then I'll make it const.
Oh, okay.
That is a little unusual. A lot of people, most people I know, don't do that. But the nice thing about that is, if you're only using it once, you're only using it in a couple of places, then you know that you aren't going to accidentally change it again afterwards. Mm-hmm. Not the worst thing in the world if you don't do that, but that's what I do. And it seemed like there really aren't any downsides to declaring and defining anything together. So I did go check to see if I could turn that off. And I was able to find in the preferences where they had a whole big list of checkboxes for, you know, here are all the things that we test. Ironically, I couldn't find that one. That was getting a little too deep. And that must have been part of some other larger thing that I would have had to turn off a bunch of things to turn off that. Mm-hmm. Now, what this also made me think is, well, this is – that particular giant list of checkboxes made me feel like this was a very developer-centric application, right? Because Apple's doesn't generally give you a lot of these kind of options right. in their UI like that. But then it occurred to me that actually Xcode does give you these options. But what's interesting is that big list of checkboxes, mm-hmm. that's in the build settings.
Right.
So so that, you know, when you look at it that way, like the fact that theirs is in the IDE and Xcode is in the build settings is going to be a bit of an integration issue, and I'll get to that more in a second. And the version that I got a week ago when I started this work didn't understand Objective-C literals, which gets to the problem about keeping up with Apple's technology. Mm-hmm. So that's originally going to be kind of a ding, kind of in the minus side. But what's interesting is I downloaded a new version of it today, and I had to download an early adopter program version of it. But they do encourage you to do that, and you can just get one of those from the website. You don't need to sign up for anything. And the one that I got today did have support for it in their editor. Mm-hmm. So that actually is a plus.
It speaks well of them. I mean, how long have we had, publicly, I guess, shipped with Xcode 4.4 was shipped with 10.8. So what that's been a few weeks only.
Yeah, so Xcode 4.4 was released on July 25th. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would seem to me to indicate that they were probably working on it when it was still in beta.
Sure.
And they got it out pretty quickly once it was out of beta.
Do you know if they're using Clang on the back end or they're using like their own compiler?
I will get to that in a second.
Okay.
But it's a good point. So, and then when I looked for all this information about, when did you release this fix? How long did it take? I found this massive list of the bugs that they had fixed in each version of it. So when you put those two things together, the transparency and the speed, for me, these are both hallmarks of smaller, hungrier companies. Mm-hmm. So again, that's definitely in the plus column. Now, literals were only supported in the editor as of today's release. Actually, I might have just missed it by a day actually for last week. So they might have had it by like Sunday of last week, too. But even when they didn't have it in the editor, it still built correctly. And actually, I believe that was something that someone posted about. Mm. Saying, you know, hey, you guys don't seem to support this. And he said, but we do. The reason they always supported it build-wise is because they don't do builds at all.
Uh-huh.
What they do, what they require you to do is already have Xcode installed.
Mm.
And already have, you know, use the, whatever the Xcode switch, that's not what it's called, something Xcode select.
Yeah, Xcode select.
To have the one that has the Xcode build to be pointed to the right one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a very interesting point there because they need that. And they need that because they're called app code. They're not called Mac code. Mm-hmm. They build, they're pitched as use this to develop your iOS apps. And so they can't do code signing themselves because they need Apple's certificate. They need Apple's tools to do those things. At least that's my understanding. I'm pretty sure that's right. I'm pretty sure they couldn't write their own code signing tool and just use Apple's certificate. Certainly right. Apple would sue them for it, if nothing else. So that's another way. When I say, you know, how do you deal with free? You deal with free by using, you know, by getting your cost down as low as you can. Well, this is one way to get your cost down is not to have to build the compiler at all.
Right.
So that was by necessity because they couldn't. Mm-hmm. And also presumably a way for them to get this thing out for anyone. On the other hand, so they weren't able to use the compiler, which is something that Code Warrior was always going to get tripped up on because Code Warrior did have its own compiler.
Mm-hmm.
One reason why it was $600 versus $99.
Right.
And it was also for Code Warrior, this was one of their benefits, one of the reasons to buy them instead of going with Apple's built-in tools. Was because they were really good at writing compilers, at least writing certain compilers, mm-hmm. and integrating them into their IDE. Now, one thing that I think I remember, and I've never had, well, we'll see, Pal Wolf, whether you think this is correct. My understanding is one reason that Code Warrior was a lot faster than Xcode, and Project Builder, the one before Xcode from Apple, is because Code Warrior integrated its compiler into the IDE better than Xcode could. They would do the front end compilation first, and use the ASTs from that as part of their index. And then when you actually hit the build button, build keystroke shortcut, then they would do the rest. And so what seemed like a fairly short build to you was actually only the second part of the compilation, mm-hmm. the backend compilation.
I heard something similar, so I don't know the internal details, but yeah, I mean, CodeWar was much faster, and I think I would also attribute that to the fact that they didn't have to shell out to GSCC.
Right, so I think that the reason why Xcode couldn't do that is because they were using GCC. Now, Apple used GCC in the same way that I've been talking about other companies leveraging what's out there already, in that Apple wouldn't have been able to build what it had if for many years if they weren't able to leverage GCC's capabilities. Mm-hmm. But since GCC is GPL, they couldn't link against it directly.
Right.
Which meant that they had to call off to another process to do it, which meant that they had to start compilation again from scratch, you know, each time you click build for any of the files that were affected.
Well, you kind of had like the pre-compiled header things, right? So they wouldn't have to do it from scratch necessarily, at least for the headers. But yeah, and of course you could keep around your .o files and do dependency analysis, and if the timestamp has changed, and then you know you need to regenerate your .o. But I think, I don't know if they always could, I don't know if they could ever avoid the, at least the linker phase.
Right, so Xcode actually did, it's actually kind of funny, the links, the repeated efforts that Xcode made over the years to try to get around the fact that the GCC situation was so bad for them. Mm-hmm. Tried a distributed compilation, like mm-hmm. more than once. They tried DISCC at first, and then they tried a second distributed compilation system of their own making that was supposed to be more industrial, of better use with more resources, with more secondary computers to it, that I think was kind of pitched at companies like Adobe. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever? You probably never.
Yeah. Well, I tried it, and it didn't really result in too much speed up for me.
And then the other one was they were actually running GCC in the background. There was a checkbox to turn that on for mm-hmm. a while, mm-hmm. and that just I never heard of anyone having a good with that, really. But, you know, they just kept trying because it was this big problem. And, of course, what they finally wound up doing was, you know, starting their own compilation effort, compiler writing effort from scratch. And that did the trick. But it's funny that even now, I'm not sure that Xcode is, I don't know exactly what it is. But certainly Xcode has the capability to do it.
I would say, you know, in terms of compiler quality, Clang is much more in the running than GCC was compared to CodeWar. That Clang has, you know, maybe it's faster, or at least it is in the same class, in the same caliber, that it has a chance of being faster than CodeWar would have been. Because, I mean, you have to also keep in mind that, you know, CodeWar was fast on machines that were, 10 years old? So
We're much slower.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, one thing this means to me is if Xcode is going back in the direction of CodeWar, AppCode is going in the direction of GCC because they're using Xcode build separately and they have their own index, which is completely separate. Mm-hmm. So when you put build with Xcode build, again, it's starting not from scratch. I mean, Xcode build is using all of the same tricks that you just mentioned. They're using a pre-compiled header. They're using dependency analysis. But it's still starting from scratch. If you need to build a file, you can't rely on sort of half of it having been done while you were typing
right.
the last time you hit save. So it might very well be slower. With smaller projects might not be that big of a deal, and with more powerful machines now. But it is an issue. And what's also interesting is, you know, you and I have both been talking about LLVM, the LLVM project. Clang project, as you know, this unalloyed good mm-hmm. is something where it's kind of our savior, right? So we don't really have very many bad things to say about it.
Right.
What's interesting was in some of the comments I saw on the JetBrains website or the forum section for AppCode, I actually heard one of their engineers dissing LLVM. Because someone was asking, hey, do you guys use LLVM? You know, pretty much exactly the way you were asking.
Right.
now and say, you know, hey, this is supposed to be some really cool stuff. Why aren't you guys using it? Are you guys using it? Mm-hmm. And I bet they get that question a lot.
Sure.
And so it was, the answer was a little disgruntled because he was kind of saying, you know, no, we don't use LVM, and you know, it's got some problems. You know, so I thought that was funny to see the different. the different points of view here, whereas we see it as, you know, great, more. They're seeing it as, well, of course our stuff's better than LLVM. LLVM is, you know, they might say, well, it's new, or well, it's whatever. You know, as far as they're concerned, their compiler stuff is great.
Well, and, you know, are they approaching it strict only from like the indexing point of view, or are they talking, because I'm willing to believe that, like, you know, a purpose-built indexer might be better than something that actually is kind of reading your source code for the purpose of building a binary.
Sure. Yeah. No, so that's the thing. The comment did not go into detail about what these perceived problems with LLVM, but they were definitely, you know, going down that route. They weren't just saying, well, you know, LLVM isn't for us. Hey, we've got our own thing. It was definitely, you know. Mm-hmm. Something wrong with it. Mm-hmm. So I would actually be quite curious to, you know, buy the guy a beer and say, you know, hey, you know, what do you really see is wrong with him? Or have you actually tried it and compared it to what you have and here are the things that are wrong with it? Or is it more this whole, you know, not invented here kind of mm-hmm. attitude? Okay. So so the next thing I tried was symbol search. And that'll be the last thing that I'm going to talk about here today, and because that was the thing that I was specifically told was better about AppCode, when I wrote a post called this in June 12th, where I talked about the difficulty of finding all uses of a property when it's being used in two different naming formats, in the set foo versus foo.
Right.
And so I wrote about this, and also I think the original thing had come from Brent Simmons, and so we were both dealing with this issue, and someone called Chris Bennett mm-hmm. tweeted to both of us in which AppCode users chuckle at the idea of doing pre-IDE style text searches for property uses, and I thought, you know, that's a pretty effective burn, you know, because it's true that this idea that you need to have the text line up exactly, mm-hmm. once you think about it, feels kind of prehistoric, doesn't it?
Sure.
Okay. So I went to AppCode to do a search and to see, hey, what does it show me? What does it do? How is this going to make my life easier? And what I got from my search was a series of entries that were each trees and, you know, for a variety of different kinds of things. So I'm looking at a search right now. It's got properties, it's got found usages, it's got dynamic usages, it's got non-code usages.
Ooh, dynamic usages? Is that like at selector recognition or something?
It's actually zib usages.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually, you know, pretty good in and of itself. That means either they're, I'm not quite sure how they do it. They could be using Xcode's zib tool to be getting stuff out of it.
Okay.
In fact, I expect that they would want to do that because they don't want to be trying to parse zips themselves if they can avoid it. But what I noticed looking through this, so even in Xcode, you know, we've talked about how I have some problems with some of the find features that Xcode has. But even in Xcode, even that fuzzy scroll bar thing, all of the entries were linear. So you could browse through them one after the other. Whereas this is sort of a deep list, which feels quite different. So it's a little hard to sort of browse everything all at the same time. So I said, okay, hey, I know how to make lists be entirely disclosed, right? So, you know, option right arrow.
Oh, I bet you run into the fact that they're not entirely native.
Right, they're not native. So option arrow does nothing. Mm-hmm. But there is this list of buttons along the left-hand side of that view, and one of them is expand all, and it's got this this icon that I'd never seen before that wasn't a standard Mac icon. And it actually has it does have a keystroke shortcut. The trouble is, and expand all, I'm trying to come up here again in the tooltip. It's command something plus. And I can't tell what the something is.
Is that symbol unrecognizable?
It's like a little keyboard symbol. I'm not sure quite what it is. So the idea being for me, so this is really where it's sunk in, that even if the functionality in app code is wonderful, it's great, has everything in it, things that I could use every day, what I would have to do to be able to use these features is train myself basically in a different OS experience. Mm-hmm. Because basically what this is as a Java app, now I can't be entirely sure of this, but from everything that I'm seeing with Java applications, because Java itself does not have a native format, it doesn't have its own UI, most of the time the UI of large-scale Java apps is taken from Windows. And I see this with Eclipse, I see this with this application, I've seen this with other applications. You know, this is basically a little slice of Windows in my IDE. And so if I would want to use this IDE, I would basically have to switch to using Windows to develop iOS apps. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's not going to happen.
Right.
As we talked about last week, I believe it was last week. You know, I'm in this for the experience, for the Mac experience. And just the idea of saying, well, okay, I'm gonna work on a Mac. I'm going to write apps for Apple platforms. But now I'm going to have to conform myself to something which is entirely alien to me. That's just not going to work. So excuse me for a second. But that's what I'd have to do. And it also struck me, you know, we talked about, well, you know, what are they – they're competing with free. How are they going to make their mark? And one of the things I saw about AppCode is that, you know, when I said only a couple people have ever talked to me about how great AppCode is, it really is only a couple people, like two or three overall, like maybe one person that I've dealt with much over time. Why aren't there more people like this? Because really AppCode is the closest thing we've gotten so far to a serious contender for an IDE. It's the only company, major company, that's put its hat in the ring for this sort of thing. So why aren't there more people excited about this? Well, in the end, I realized it's because it's not for us. Because when you think about it, we've got a lot of developers coming to iOS who weren't Mac developers. That's why, you know, WWDC is so crowded these days and selling out in 3 minutes. Where are these developers coming from? Well, some of them have got to be coming from Windows or from Linux or wherever. And what they come to is an experience where, okay, you know, I'm coming from a Windows computer writing Windows platforms, whether it's Windows desktop or Wince or whatever. And now suddenly they've got to come together. They've got to learn a whole new set of APIs. Well, that's, you know, they probably can't get around that unless they use something like Mono or other stuff.
Mono?
It's actually Mono.
Is it?
Yes, because Mono is the Spanish word for monkey.
I stand corrected.
Yeah. I a lot of people have been surprised at that, but I looked it up. So... So, you know, they're saying, oh my God, I've got to change everything. This is impossible. Well, for those people, they can use app code and they get the blessed relief of something where, you know, all the keystroke shortcuts are the Windows keystroke shortcuts. All the UI looks like Windows UI, or at least, you know, close enough. And it's got to be something that they really look forward to because, okay, I've got to do it on a Mac because we need Xcode. Well, you know, how can we make this better? Well, we can do this. Now, I've looked at their website, and their website does have something about all the companies that use AppCode, mm-hmm. and it's big companies, it seems. Maybe not all big companies. I should probably look again to be sure. My impression for first looking at it was like Time Warner or something like that. I should really look again. But it would make sense to me if these large companies were the ones that tended to use AppCode, because the large companies would be the ones where they've already got a culture which is probably pretty Windows-centric. And they've probably got a lot of developers who are also pretty mainstream, pretty Windows-centric. They're not sort of the mavericks going off and starting their own, you know, iOS consulting shop. And so this would be a way for them to say, well, you know, we got to make you do iOS stuff because that's where the money is, but we'll make it as easy for you as possible by doing it this way.
Yeah, I think you have a point there, but I would also like to point out that they probably want to put the biggest code companies out there on their webpage as they can, just so it's like, look, this big company trusts us. You should too. So it's they wouldn't want to put, you know, Jim's iOS consulting company out there because sure. No one knows about Jim.
Sure. Although I do wonder if let's see if I can find this thing now. I do wonder if they might, well, like if they were prestigious boutique shops, like if Omni was using them, mm-hmm. I wonder if they said something about that. But yeah, this could be. And it also could be that, yes, they want to put the big companies, they want to put the big name companies because that's who, I don't know, that's who they're pitching to, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's my extrapolation from what I see from the app, especially. This is who it's for, but it's true that I don't have any. I haven't actually talked with anybody about this. So this is interpolation rather than fact for me.
So that's good because a lot of times it actually helps to, you know, kind of be ignorant and express your ignorance, and that way you can kind of get on the record and before someone in the know actually corrects you, so this is a learning experience, so it's to get those ideas down and the common misconceptions, I think is a good thing for people to hear about.
Claim chowder, actually.
There you go.
And actually, in speaking of I'm not sure why I thought of, another thing that I wanted to bring up was I don't know how I was making this connection in my head, but one last thing I guess before we sign off was I'm not sure it's really necessary. I'll say it anyway because I've just blathered about it for a minute. But one other thing that I was also thinking of when I was thinking of this, when I was thinking in terms of how these guys are going to compete, what they're doing to compete, was I thought of Sparrow. And we did talk a little bit about Sparrow last time around. But the idea being that like AppCode, like IDEs, Sparrow was fighting against basically free. And so Sparrow tried to just go ahead and keep doing what they were doing and charging money for it and you know, not charging a lot for it, but trying to get the staff to do everything they needed to do. And in our case, you know, with AppCode, I think the contrast again is that AppCode is doing kind of the least amount of work that it can to get the product out and also leveraging something which they already had. It would be like if Sparrow were actually an enterprise email company that was making their money off of some surefire product. And then they also said, well, all right, now we'll do, since we've done an iOS client anyway for that, now we'll do a mainstream client. Even though our money is not, you know, most of our money is still coming from this other stuff. And actually that does, you know, maybe to sort of tie it off and make that digression actually useful. I'm curious what will happen with this, because if this isn't something that's making them a lot of money, and I can't imagine that it is, how much time will they put into it? Because while I've said a couple of times, well, they're not putting the same amount of effort into it that you would if you were doing a full service IDE with a compiler and everything else, they actually still are putting a decent amount of effort into it. They're putting effort in integration. I believe you can debug directly from within the app, which would mean they are integrated with LLDB, excuse me. And of course, even just getting integration working with Xcode Build, it's not just a slam dunk, because Xcode Build is probably a pretty complicated application to use and to make sure that it all works the way you expect it to.
If you say they have the same Xcode proj file, then it is hopefully as simple as kicking off Xcode Build.
Right. But then they have to get all the results from Xcode Build and show that in their IDE.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And show those results in their source code editors. So it's not, again, it's non-trivial, mm-hmm. the work that they're doing. And so I'm curious what their future is going to be. Now, they don't have to deal with the same issues that we've been talking about recently with pricing, because they're entirely their own app. They don't have to, you know, can charge upgrade pricing. They can charge custom pricing. Like they've got a company option, so they charge a certain amount per seat, which is something that we'd have a hard time doing per company in the App Store, for example. Mm-hmm. Everything else, but so they've got a lot of advantages here. But I wonder if they'll still be around in 5 years in this option, or if they're doing the same amount of work to keep up with Apple. Because that's really the danger, right? They they could say, well, you know, we made a go of it and we're still going to keep it out there so we can still make some money off of it. But you're going to stop seeing updates. So, but, you know, hey, I hope they make enough money to keep going. And again, I think that threshold is lower than it might have been otherwise.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about, like, IntelliJ going away because it sounds like a solid product. Right? Everyone who I know who's talked about it, you know, says, you know, it's head and shoulders above Eclipse. I have not used it personally, but there you go. But I would be wondering if AppCode would be around still.
Right. Yep. Yep. That's what I'm curious about. Mm-hmm. So we'll...
Okay. And I have a couple of, three items here I thought of while you're talking about AppCode.
Sure.
And, first one, do you remember the timeline of AppCode? I seem to remember, like, it first shipped when we still had Xcode 3 with a separate interface builder.
That's a good point. Well, certainly the version number of AppCode is 1.5.
Okay.
So I don't know what the timeline of it is, but that would seem to indicate that it's probably been around a little while. And Xcode 4 was only really introduced publicly, a year and a half ago?
Yeah, something like that. But I guess the interface builder story is that if you double click on a zip, it's going to fire up Xcode and you're going to edit it in there now?
Fire up Xcode.
Yeah, okay. And then it also sounds like that it sounds like AppCode is also single window, much like Xcode 4 is?
Yes, it's actually Xcode's UI has certainly become a lot more like traditional IDEs than, say, you know, the old style Code Warrior model mm-hmm. of multi-window approach. In fact, the tabs look very similar between the two. So, in terms of looking, you're just looking at it for the first time. It doesn't feel that different. Mm-hmm. The details are quite different, but overall, it feels very similar.
Okay, and the final thing is when you mentioned the GPL and GCC, that's actually reminding me. I'm not a lawyer, but I seem to remember like one of the ideas behind like GPL and whether you get infected by it by using some GPL code is that because the standard idea of a workaround with GPL is like you have this chunk of code and it's GPL'd and you don't want it affecting your code. So it's like, okay, I'll put it into its own binary and I'll call it. And the GPL clause for that says that if your app could still run with the binary missing and still have most of its functionality or this can do something useful, then yeah, you can have it separate and in its own separate process space or address space or whatever, and it won't affect you. But if you're just trying to do it as a workaround and your app is essentially or your program is essentially useless without this external binary, then you're just doing a workaround here and you actually would be infected with the GPL. And it strikes me that Xcode until it had Clang would be pretty darn useless without GCC. I don't know if it actually could function. For all I know, it'd crash on launch.
Well, no. Technically, Xcode could. Let's see. I mean, Xcode was. No, it wouldn't crash on launch.
Okay.
And if you wanted to build things that didn't require GCC, you could get along without it.
Oh, good point.
This was more of a deal when Xcode did other stuff, like you could compile Java
right
with Xcode for a while and then you couldn't, but you could for a while. I'm trying to remember if there were other things you could do with it. I mean, there was some perfunctory support for Python and Ruby, wasn't there? I mean, there's editor support for it for a while.
We will always have Rez.
Yeah. But are there other C compilers out there?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, and I remember Apple making waves about the Intel compilers.
Right, yeah, you could slip those in. I don't remember if that went very far, but yeah, for a while there, that would work. And I'm thinking there was something else. Maybe I might be thinking about them. Like, you could even use different Java compilers back in the day. Like, you could use
Jikes.
Jikes, mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking of. So, yeah, it was definitely, and it's definitely a complex enough device that the build system for Xcode was separate than underlying build tools.
Yeah, you're talking about the Jam days?
Right. Well, Jam was the old one, and then they did a remember the native build system that they touted? It was native because it was no longer using this external tool, but all the logic was inside of Xcode itself. So yeah, certainly you could consider it to be separate, but yeah, certainly by the end there really wasn't much else you could do besides using GCC to build your apps. But yeah, it's interesting. Certainly, and certainly by the end there, you know, when they were starting to make noises about doing Clang, there was the GPL3, which now I don't remember the details of it, but there was certainly more restrictions.
Sure, sure. It was the entire idea of like closing the web services loophole, right? The web app loophole.
I don't remember the details, but
what was it all about? It was also the TiVo deal.
There was something about patents, actually, I think. I mean, there might have been something where we're like, hey, if the company that's doing this has, I could be just making this up, but there seemed to be something where like they were going after the behavior of the companies involved rather than just dealing with the technology. And even if it wasn't exactly that, there were certainly certainly Apple was as far as I know, there was never anything under the GPL3 that was ever linked in with Apple's products.
Yeah, I seem to remember even like Apple pulling tools that went to GPL3 or something, some such. So yeah, Apple's been, you know, the Apple lawyers are pretty on top of that stuff.
It does seem like it.
So yeah, that pretty much covers my three things that I wrote down while you were talking.
Okay, cool. Okay. So I guess that'll be it.
Yeah.
So if you want to send us some feedback or see the show notes or download other episodes, etc., go to edgecasesshow.com, all one word. Now, my Twitter handle is apontius, APONTIOUS. And Wolf's Twitter handle, you can reach him there, is his last name, Wrench. That's the word rent, RANT, plus Z, plus SCH. We'll see you next time. Bye.